Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. Lebanese Prime Minister Saad Hariri announced his resignation Saturday after delivering a blistering attack on Iran and its proxy militia, Hezbollah, both in Lebanon and across the region. VOA's Edward Uranian reports.
Lebanese President Michel Aoun indicated that Hariri's office had called him from outside Lebanon to relay the news of his resignation. Commentators on Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV stressed that Hariri's resignation speech was made from the Saudi capital Riyadh and that it had regional implications. In his speech, Hariri accused both Iran and its Lebanese proxy militia Hezbollah of creating discord in the country as well as across the region. He says that outside parties alluding to Iran that wish ill on Lebanon have sown sectarian strife among the Lebanese, gaining control of the levers of power and setting up a state within a state. He also accused Iran of meddling in the internal affairs of other Arab states, including Syria, Iraq, Bahrain, and Yemen.
It's wheels up from the U.S. state of Hawaii as President Donald Trump leaves for Japan, part of his scheduled 13-day trip to Asia. He will also visit South Korea, China, and Vietnam, his longest journey as president. In his meetings with other leaders, the president is to tell them that the world is running out of time to stop North Korea's nuclear warhead and ballistic missile development, which U.S. administration officials deem to be the biggest threat currently faced. This is VOA News. The second phase of a campaign to vaccinate tens of thousands of Rohingya refugee children against cholera gets underway in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh. The oral cholera vaccination campaign, which is being led by the World Health Organization, is targeting nearly 180,000 children between the ages of 1 and 5 years. They will receive an additional dose of the vaccine for added protection. The children had received a first dose of the vaccine when the campaign was launched on October 10th. At that time, the oral cholera vaccine was administered to more than 700,000 people above the age of 1. Meanwhile, a nutritional assessment by the UN's Children Fund finds life-threatening malnutrition rates soaring among the children of Rohingya refugees who have fled to Bangladesh. The United Nations refugee chief, Filippo Grandi, has sharply criticized the Security Council and world leaders for failing to prevent and resolve conflicts that have displaced nearly 66 million people around the world.
Have we become unable to broker peace? I ask this question here in the Security Council, whose raison d'être are peace and security, because I see the direct impact of these failures every day on the lives of tens of millions of people forced to abandon their homes with grim prospects of being able to return, sometimes for generations.
Grandi says the sharp rise in forced displacement reflects weaknesses in international cooperation. The U.S. government has released a report on climate change, saying there is no convincing alternative explanation for global warming besides human causes. The report runs counter to the position on climate change taken by the current U.S. administration, as well as that of the head of the Environmental Protection Agency. A militant allegedly involved in the deadly 2012 attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya, made his first appearance in a U.S. federal court in Washington Friday, where he was ordered held in custody until a preliminary hearing Thursday. Mustafa al-Aman, a Libyan national, is facing charges of killing a person in the course of an attack on a federal facility and providing material support to terrorists resulting in death. The charges stem from the September 11, 2012 attack on the U.S. diplomatic compound in Benghazi by Islamic militants that killed U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens and 3 other Americans. The recent flurry of social and economic reform coming out of Saudi Arabia has left some Saudis ecstatic, others more circumspect, and others, a few conservatives, bewildered or even angry. The Saudi crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, told a crowd of investors at a conference in late October that he was merely attempting to return Saudi Arabia to the moderate Islam that once prevailed before the Iranian Revolution. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
The Constitution says that a president can only serve 2 5-year terms. He wants to go for the third term, which is outside the Constitution.
Zambian President Edgar Lungu warns judges not to plunge the Southern African country into chaos.
We have called for a boycott for our people to avoid certain businesses. In other words, we don't want to give money to our opponents.
Kenyan opposition lawmakers call for an economic boycott of businesses linked to President Uhuru Kenyatta.
This is a moment where nothing can be surprising from the Burundi government, because for a while, all depends on the will of Pierre Nkurunziza.
And the Burundian cabinet approves a constitutional amendment to allow President Pierre Nkurunziza to stay in office until 2034. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Zambian President Edgar Lungu has warned judges that the country could be plunged into chaos if they prevent him from seeking another term in the 2021 presidential election. Addressing his supporters, the president said the court should not copycat of Kenyan judges who annul the East African country's recent presidential election. Lungu's eligibility is being challenged by civil society and opposition groups who contend that his final four-year term ends in 2021. Supporters of the president disagree, saying he's qualified to seek re-election. For reaction, I reach Charles Kakoma, spokesman for the Zambian main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND, from the capital Lusaka.
We have condemned the stand taken by President Edgar Lungu. It is basically not only threatening the judiciary, but also is putting himself above the law. The Constitution says that a president can only serve 2 5-year terms. Now he wants to go for the third term, which is outside the Constitution. And the matter, because he showed his interest to stand in 2021, as UPND, we have taken him to the Constitutional Court so that he is prevented from standing. Now he's threatening the judges who are about to rule on the matter. This cannot be allowed. In other functioning democracies, he has breached the Constitution and supposed to either resign or even be impeached.
Some opposition supporters are saying that even the judges who are set to rule on the case regarding his eligibility to contest in the 2021 general election should recuse themselves, because any ruling could be misinterpreted and could further create tension in the country. What is your take on that?
Well, basically, there's a mistrust about the Constitutional Court, because in the past they have made the judgments that were outrageous, and the people do not trust them. But we believe over this matter, it is such a straightforward matter. The Constitution says 2 5-year terms, and without amending that Constitution, it is difficult to see how these judges can bend the law to rule in favor of Edgar Lungu, and that's why he's threatening them, so that they can find the technicalities for him to stand.
Well, President Lungu denied threatening or intimidating the judges, but isn't he right by cautioning the judges to be mindful of their actions regarding their ruling, because it could possibly create tension, chaos and instability, and possibly violence?
No, that is a clear interference of the judiciary. The president belongs to the executive, and there should be separation of powers. Now he's threatening judges that belong to the judiciary, another form of government. So basically the opposite is true, that if the constitutional court rules that he stands again, not only will they be sending a bad precedent that somebody can stand for 3 terms instead of 2 terms, but also that in fact it will annoy a lot of people. That is where conflict can come from, because he's imposing himself to stand again. That can create conflict.
But Charles, isn't the president fair by saying that judges in Zambia should not be copycats of the Kenyan judges, and that they should rule in accordance with the Zambian constitution, taking into cognizance of the fact that their ruling could have a direct impact on possible instability or chaos in Zambia? Don't you think his caution is legitimate?
No, the judiciary in Kenya did the right thing to nullify an election which was marred with irregularities. And that is what is sending shivers even to Edgar Lungu here in Zambia. And he's trying to intimidate the judiciary so that when the election petition is heard, it is not nullified. So he's basically just frightening the judiciary. What he's doing is actually breaking the law. There's a rule of law that should be followed, and the judges have to follow the rule of law. If the constitution is broken by people like him, he should be told that he's wrong. If he wants to impose himself to stand again, he must be told, no, sir, you can't stand again. Well, the constitution is against the third term.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for the Zambian Main Opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND. He spoke with me from Lusaka. Parliamentarians from Kenya's main opposition party, the National Super Alliance, or NASA, are calling on their supporters to boycott 3 businesses linked to President Uhuru Kenyatta. The lawmakers say the economic boycott, or what they term the Economic Liberation Program, aims to pressure the government to allow for electoral reforms. It came after Kenyatta was declared winner of the presidential election rerun. Former Prime Minister Raila Odinga withdrew from the poll, saying the vote will not be credible. But supporters of the ruling party say the opposition leader's withdrawal was a tactical error of judgment. For more on the economic boycott, I read Jakayo Midiwu, a parliamentarian from the opposition NASA coalition in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
We have called for a boycott for our people to avoid certain businesses. In other words, we don't want to give money to our opponents. We still think there's a chance to talk, but I don't think the Jubilee side, they're trying to talk for the sake of the future of Kenya. What has happened is that Raila Odinga, who was our main candidate here, the statement seemed to imply that there was room for dialogue, because you have to sort out the issue of this continued botched elections every 5 years. But there is no movement from the Jubilee side. They seem to want to get to office and move on. And we are saying, no, we can only talk or we go our separate way.
But some people are suggesting that why do the Jubilee side need the talks? Because he won the election rerun by 98%. He has the legitimacy. Why does he need talks?
First of all, the ruling has never extended his hand to any talks. He said he can only talk when he's sworn in. That means there is a bare minimum, the zero minimum that he has to be the president of Kenya no matter what. Number two, we boycotted the election. The technological kits say only 3.5 million people voted. They are manufactured votes to say 7.5 million people voted. We will give that to them, but what we are saying, we will never be ruled by force. We must sit down and talk, and the best option is to keep Kenya together. But if the Kenya that we want to live in, we must play by the rules of outside the law, which is what they are doing, then we don't want to be part of it. It is good to peacefully discuss how we all live in Kenya, but in 2 separate countries. So one can be Kenya different and one can be Kenya different. That is our thought process.
Some are saying that by announcing this economic boycott, you are targeting Kenyan-based business, and that is tribalism because these businesses employ Kenyans, irrespective of their ethnic affiliations. So this is tribalism-based economic boycott.
Yes, you must look at them in the numbers of Kenyans that work there and their ethnic backgrounds. It is true they employ Kenyans, but which Kenyans? Kenyans have proportions of in our population. We have Luos, a big percentage, Luyas, Kikuyus, and it is. You cannot have a scenario where you only look at employment, but you don't look at who makes the money. Look at Safaricom, which is a major telecom company. Who owns Safaricom? Who owns Mobitelea? Who owns Alcazar? They are the same two tribes which are in power. So what we are saying, the people who are using their money, which we are giving to them, please never. The real Kenyans don't have stake in them except for the two tribes. And we are 42 tribes. Where do they want 42 people to go? Where they cannot, you know, where people get rich, Peter, is where majority of the people are poor and a few people are making money. That is the real Kenyan situation. Who owns Safaricom? Two people, Safaricom local, Mobitelea and Alcazar. And the rest is owned by foreigners, not Kenyans. That is the majority shareholders. And they can't keep milking us. And we keep diving into the deep end of the sea without us having a say about our destiny. That is what we are saying not.
So what is the next line of action for the NASA coalition in this tensed situation in Kenya?
We think one of the issues that might be on the table is how people live separately peacefully. We figure out how to live within our borders peacefully. How is it that the whole country is drinking milk by the ruling family? You know, everybody is a cow grower. They cannot do that. And we have a right to say enough is enough. And in Kenya, the way I see it, enough is enough. Unless people sit down to discuss how to respect one another and each other's tribes peacefully. We have to go towards that direction, Peter.
Jakayo Midiwo is a Kenyan parliamentarian from the main opposition coalition, the National Super Alliance, or NASA. He spoke with me from Nairobi. Meanwhile, the Kenyan opposition lawmakers said Friday they expect to extend the boycott to other companies linked to members of the government in the coming weeks. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached Fred Omulu, a Kenyan journalist, to find out the significance of this boycott.
Is important, and I think it is significant. Already the telecom company that is being targeted, which is Safaricom, which is the biggest telecom company in Kenya, with annual profits in the region of $400 million plus. Already they have found a very nice way to ease out their CEO, who was perceived to be very close to the government and the Jubilee administration. I mean, just out of nowhere this week, they say he's taking an extended sick leave. But you need to understand what boycott means at the grassroots, you see. At our level, probably the level of what I can only call the educated, a boycott is simply calling on people to deny certain institutions their patronship. But in the grassroots here in Kenya, it's radically different. If I tell you as your political leader to boycott the services of company A or company B, immediately the unemployed youth start taking advantage of such circumstances and they start moving around and looting, and it becomes very difficult and it can even deteriorate to the point of violence. So for example, right now I was reading some social media discussions. My friends who are halfway across the country in a region that is not very strong in support of the national resistance movement. And they were wondering if it will be possible for Brookside, which is one of the companies named, and is also the flagship company of the president, Kenyatta family. It's a milk and dairy processor. They were wondering, will it even be possible for Brookside to bring their milk products here into supermarkets and to shops here in the western part of the country, where the national resistance movement is very popular? Now, if you look at it in those terms, then you see how significant the threat is.
Kenya's economy has been on shaky ground during this campaign and election season. With this boycott, if it's seeded by supporters of the National Super Alliance, what would this mean for the Kenyan economy?
The economy has been undergoing something similar to what happened 10 years ago when we had what was known as the post-election violence. And during that period, it lasted about 2 to 3 months, during which there was hardly any business activity going on in Kenya. There was almost nil collection of taxes, and it took us about 2 years to recover. The recovery started in 2009, and that's when we went back. We are on par with the economy of 2006-2007. Now, this one took much longer because business ground to a halt around June. That was the 6th month this year. And now we are in November, so you're talking 5 months of hardly any activity. And in fact, as you speak, despite the election happening last week, there's still nothing significant happening. And the government is hardly collecting anything meaningful. So I don't know, as long as this political stalemate is drawn out, the impact might be worse, despite the fact that we haven't had any fighting or any serious militia or killings.
Do you see on the ground there NASA supporters heeding the call for a boycott?
Some of them had already even started because they sort of anticipated which companies will be targeted. It started actually a month ago when NASA was asking for some reforms in the Electoral Commission. One of the companies they said must not be part of the repeat election was Safaricom, which provided internet services to the IEBC. It has a customer base of about 20 million phone subscribers, including those people who have more than one phone, right? During this last 1 month, they've actually lost about 2 million. That's the estimate I was hearing somewhere, that they've lost about 2 million, 2.5 million customers. Now that it is official, I don't know what will happen, but there are people who are really serious about these political instructions.
Fred Omolo is a Kenyan journalist. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpoga from Kisumu. The cabinet of Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza has approved a constitutional amendment that would allow the president to stay in office until 2034. Under existing laws, Burundian presidents are limited to 2 5-year terms, but the amendment seeks to abolish the 2-term limit and lengthen presidential terms to 7 years each, and also allow the president to seek re-election. Civil society and opposition groups have condemned the measure after accusing President Nkurunziza of wanting to become a life president. For more, I read Vital Nshimirimana, Burundian leader of the group Forum for the Strengthening of Civil Society.
This is a moment where nothing can be surprising from Burundi government, because for a while, all depends on the will of Pierre Nkurunziza, who has taken into a kind of custody all the country. All what he wants is done. All what he does not want is not done. This is the situation where a dictatorship regime is becoming ahead.
Some people are suggesting that he has a parliamentary majority which will empower him to pass this successfully through parliament. A referendum will be organized which will be overwhelmingly approved. So it is certain that he will seek re-election, although opposition forces and civil society groups like yours are saying that it undermines the agreement you signed in Arusha.
Well, back in 2014, Pierre Nkurunziza tried to amend the constitution, but the civil society, the opposition, and the other interested group opposed the project. And the failure to amend the constitution and the third term candidature for Nkurunziza triggered the ongoing conflict. So now there is illegal and illegitimate institutions that rely on the will of Pierre Nkurunziza only. So now he has taken this moment where the opposition is absent, is outside, in exile, where civil society is in exile, where media are closed, to impose his will and to bring the parliament to say what he wants, or is unconstitutional, illegal, and illegitimate.
So, Vital, you are invariably saying that there is no strong civil society presence or opposition presence in Burundi to challenge the approval of cabinet to amend the constitution that will allow President Pierre Nkurunziza to seek re-election as his a second mandate, as he says, finally expires?
Right now, if Nkurunziza stands and says that he wanted to be enthroned as the king of Burundi, there is none to oppose. If Nkurunziza stands and says that he wants to change the name of Burundi, there is none to oppose, meaning that Burundi is not led as a democracy. It is led by a handful of people who are committed to breach the constitution and to destroy the Arusha peace agreement, which actually had stabilized the country.
What are you hearing from the ground in Bujumbura and other areas of the country following this report that the cabinet has approved for a constitutional amendment?
Well, there is many people who were likely to oppose, but because Pierre Nkurunziza has managed to silence all the contending voices, there is no one to oppose. But this is likely to deepen the crisis because as the people mobilized to oppose the third term of in office, they are likely to mobilize to oppose by force or later, because people who know the importance of the Arusha peace agreement will never agree that in Burundi, it prevails only the will of one person.
Vital Nshimirimana is the Burundian leader of the Group Forum for the Strengthening of Civil Society. He spoke with me from the Gambian capital, Banjul. Over the past 25 years, the world has made remarkable progress in saving young children's lives. For the first time ever, child deaths have fallen below the 6 million mark globally, but most of these deaths could be prevented, according to the latest report from the UN. VOA's Carol Pearson has more from Washington.
In 1990, 35,000 young children died around the world every day. Last year, 15,000 children and babies died daily, a huge reduction that follows tremendous global effort. While acknowledging the effort it has taken to get to this point, Dr. Flavia Bustrea with the World Health Organization says while the progress is good, it is not enough.
And I need to stress that these deaths can be prevented with the scientific knowledge we have, with the tool interventions we have, with the resources that we have available. These deaths can be prevented.
And that is the tragedy. The latest UN report on child and infant mortality states that every year, millions of children under the age of 5 die, mostly from preventable causes such as malaria, pneumonia, and diarrhea. In almost half of these cases, malnutrition plays a role. Although more children are living to their fifth birthday, Bustrea points out the UN report says 46% of child deaths occur shortly after birth.
Those deaths in the first months of life, they are caused by preterm birth, so a baby that is born too soon. They are caused by low birth weight. They are caused significantly by sepsis, severe infection that is acquired during the delivery. And they are also caused by asphyxia.
While in the womb, the fetus floats in amniotic fluid. This fluid is in the fetus's mouth, ears, and nose. After birth, if a baby cannot breathe and the birth attendant doesn't know how to clear the baby's airways, the baby will die unnecessarily. Children under 5 are also more likely to die from malaria than adults, which is one reason sub-Saharan Africa and parts of Asia have higher child mortality rates than other parts of the world. But there are bright spots in the report. Vaccines for yellow fever and now malaria are saving many children's lives. Countries like Tanzania have tackled air pollution, improved sanitation, and are providing safe drinking water. Despite these gains in reducing child mortality, immense problems remain. And the UN report says if current trends continue, some 60 million children under the age of 5 will die between now and 2030. And half of them will be newborns. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Chenye marefu na mapana huwaga kikosi mwisho, oh, mwisho. Yani ni kurumbana kukicha bila suluhisho, oh, oh. Wenda kisichoridhiki, akilikisa ya nini tutoa nero. Nimepungukiwa kipi, una naishi, sinata kibalaro, oh. Na ule utwando mapenzi kushinda na mina wewe niliuvumilia na sijaona tamaa. Sio kama siwezi kupata lia zaidi ya wewe, ila hii dunia na najichunga sana. Tena nandika huu wimbo sijipe moyo labda na kufikilia. Nataka iwe fimbo kwenye sura ya choyo ukome kunifuatilia. Nandika huu wimbo usijipe moyo labda na kuwaza sana. Nataka iwe fimbo kwenye sura ya choyo ukome kunilie. Nishachoka, 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 wacho kweli nikwambie. Yani kukicha vijembe, nishachoka, dharau maneno, nishachoka, masimango, nishachoka, wacho kweli nikwambie. Nimechoka na moto majivu. Mangapi niliyavumilia hadi nikakonda kwa wivu. Kidogo tajasho langu ulikidharau na kukinyanyasa. Utu thamani yangu ukasahau kisa anasa. Afadhali mimi nishakuzoea, dharau mama yangu waje kukosea. Huaga navuta taswira ule utumwa wa penzi lako. Pakara jona tahira kuyaifadhi mabaya yako. Mchinginga pedi una matilapa nikapenda. Upepo kwenye begi au magina niatenga. Tena nandika uwimo sijipe moyo labda na kufikilia. Nataka iwe fimbo kwenye sura ya choyo ukome kunifuatilia. Nandika uwimo usijipe moyo labda na kuwaza sana. Nataka iwe fimbo kwenye sura ya choyo ukome kunilie. Nishacho nawe nishiwe.
Forget, oh, forget, forget. go to tell her I love you. Tell her that you are my baby. Tell her that you are my only. I want to talk to your daddy. I want to tell him I want to. Me and you go for me the picky. Cause of you I go spend all my money. I say shout out to your daddy, oh, I wanna go and need it, love. I say shout out to your mommy, oh, I say shout out to your daddy, oh, I wanna go and need it, love. I say shout out to your daddy, oh, I wanna go and need it, love. To feel my shako fuwa. I say shout out to your mommy, oh, I say shout out to your daddy, oh, I wanna go and need it, love.
Mara nyingi picha zako nirudia. Na ninachoamini na kupenda sana. Japo huku thamini kongo huka unoka we. Mimasiki ni roo yangu, ikaisi kufa kwa matendo yale. Kukuwa na busara kwa penzi langu, ukani hukumu na wangu upone. cha kwangu
chanzo ni wewe
cha kulewa
chanzo ni wewe
jua
chanzo ni wewe
oh chanzo ni wewe
MSN Gang.
That I want, hey, yeah. Boy, I'm here to stay. I don't go wrong. gospel on the beat. The song it sweets me like biscuits. Techno engine decker, I'll give you my number later. Magavella na yeta na na na. She calling me techie. They want to see money daddy. The girl she dey make me dey party. Like say I dey play Super Mario. Follow me down to Butago. Me and you play Nintendo. Anyhow you want it, I like it. See anyhow you want it, I like it. I love it,
and that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, if a donkey kicks you and you kick back, you are both donkeys. I'm your host, Peter Clotta in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On October 20th, Dr. Akinwumi Ayodeji-Adesina of Nigeria became the 2017 recipient of the prestigious World Food Prize. The World Food Prize, known as the Nobel Prize for Agriculture and Nutrition, is the foremost international honor recognizing the achievements of individuals who have advanced human development by improving the quality, quantity, or availability of food in the world. It was established in 1986 by Norman Borlaug, an agronomist and Nobel Peace Prize laureate who is widely recognized as the father of the Green Revolution. Over the past two decades, Dr. Adesina, formerly Nigeria's Minister of Agriculture and now the President of the African Development Bank, has worked tirelessly to expand Nigeria's agricultural production, thwart corruption, and increase the availability of credit to smallholder farmers across Africa. As Minister of Agriculture, he introduced e-wallet, a system of electronic vouchers which allows farmers to bypass corrupt elements that had controlled the fertilizer distribution system for 40 years. As a direct consequence of the e-wallet system, the production of cassava, rice, sorghum, maize, and cotton rose dramatically, resulting in a significant increase in farmers' income and significant improvement of food security for 40 million people in rural farm households. It makes no sense. You have a continent with 65% of all the world's uncultivated arable land not being able to feed itself, said Dr. Adesina. We have to unlock the full potential of Africa's agriculture and turn agriculture from something that's used for managing poverty to something that's used for creating wealth. Dr. Adesina pledged to use the $250,000 award that comes with the World Food Prize to provide fellowships and grants to young Africans dedicated to making a living through agriculture. Congratulations on winning the 2017 World Food Prize. Your devotion to the cause of fighting hunger is admirable and deeply needed, said Vice President Mike Pence in a statement read at the awards ceremony by USAID Administrator Mark Green. As our global food system is stretched and the need to feed more people grows, agricultural transformation will require persistence from leaders like you in driving change and capitalizing on public and private sector expertise.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.